took a picture at Oklahoma State one time. It was going on some magazine or something. So Daddy drew up a 4-3 defense in the background, you know. So we had our picture taken with it, just in case somebody from Nebraska or one of the other teams saw the picture and said, oh, no, they're not running the 3-4. I'm Wade Phillips.
And I'm Wes Phillips. We're past and present coaches here to bring you an insider's perspective on the teams, the people, and the personalities that we've encountered over time. All right, so in this episode, we're going to talk about bumisms, some famous quotes from Bum Phillips, longtime high school, college, NFL football coach. Had some great ones, you know, obviously part of our family here. One of the things that Bum always stood apart from some other coaches, I mean, a lot of coaches had some great looks back then. You know, you had your Tom Landry's, your Hank Strams, I mean, people wearing suits on the sideline. And of course, Bum, you know, had his signature cowboy boots and his cowboy hat. But one of the things that maybe some people don't know is that Bum never wore his cowboy hat in the Astrodome because he said, Mama always said that if it can't rain on you, you're indoors. He wasn't allowed to wear a cowboy hat or any hat indoors. And his mom said that if it can't rain on you, you're indoors. That's how she termed indoor versus outdoor.
Well, he was going to do what his mom said. And yeah, you don't wear a hat indoors. So he didn't wear it in the Astrodome. But his mom kind of ruled the roost. So I know why he took that hat off when he went inside the Astrodome.
I love that quote because I think it just speaks to his nature. You know, he really was a country personality. You know, he came from the country. He grew up, you know, helping his dad work a ranch.
Yeah. And speaking of his humor, you know what he said about that? He said, I've always said these things. Only when I was at Needle in high school, people weren't coming around asking me these questions. And so, like you said, he was country and not the King's English. He said, I ain't, and didn't put everything together right way, but you knew exactly what he meant. These are fun to go through because he had great common sense and he had a great sense of humor.
You know, him talking about, I always said these things, it kind of reminded me of one of his other quotes, you know, where he says, I always thought I could coach. I just thought people were poor judges of good coaches.
Yep.
Which I loved. And I know, you know, he said something similar about that when he had been coaching for years in Texas high school ball. And then he went and worked for Bear Bryant at Texas A&M. I remember him talking about how after working with Bear Bryant, just the credibility that gave him, you know, he said, I was saying a lot of the same things. He said, but now everyone listened to me because they thought Bear Bryant taught it to me.
That's exactly right. I've heard him say that many times. And there was a lot of truth in that. So,
well, yeah, he always did call Bear Bryant the greatest coach that he had ever worked with. How about talking about after a game, the harder we played, the behinder we got.
Yeah, he said that a few times, but not too many because we didn't lose too many games together.
I love that too. Again, it's got that such a country humor feel to it. As far as his nickname, now you could probably set the record straight of how he got his nickname as Bum. Was it something to do with bumblebees or his sister couldn't pronounce brother correctly? What is the actual story there?
Well, he shortened it to say his sister couldn't say brother, but he actually got stung by bumblebees when he was a little kid. In fact, his mother called him Bummel, and she didn't call him Bum. She called him Bummel. His sister just shortened it to Bum, but he got the nickname because he got stung by a nest of bum. He got into a nest of bumblebees, and they stung him pretty good, and so it stuck with him. And, you know, he said, you know, as far as Bum's concerned, he said, as long as it's a name and not a description, I don't mind.
Yeah, I also saw him saying, you know, I don't mind being called Bum as long as you don't put a U in front of it.
Yeah, or an A or a Z.
Right. A little trivia for maybe some people have heard him referred to as O.A. Bum Phillips in the past. Maybe one of the most unique. I certainly have never met another Owl O-A-I-L, Andrew Phillips, in my time. Have you ever, I know he was named after his dad. Have you ever met another Ole?
No, he was a junior. His dad was Ole, but again, he had a nickname. They called him Flop. Your great-granddad was Flop, and your granddad was Bum. So, and he said he said the best thing he ever did for me was not name me Ole. So he didn't carry on the family tradition there. He said, can't nobody spell it or pronounce it.
Well, that's why you have to have a nickname if someone names you Ole.
That's right.
One that he's kind of known for telling Bob Costas at one point, but I also have seen the old footage of him on the Johnny Carson show. He was on the Tonight Show with Johnny Carson, and he took Helen, my grandmother, you know, your mom, on all the road trips. And he was asked, why do you take your wife on all the road trips? And he famously said, because she's too ugly to kiss goodbye.
Yeah, that didn't go real well at home, over real well at home, but but the Johnny Carson's audience laughed about it, but I'm not sure my mom did too much.
Well, what about you personally? I mean, you know, this is your mom. I mean, I know, you know, you understood his sense of humor and he was just trying to get a laugh, but how did you feel about it at the time?
I can say it didn't go over real well with my mom, so I kind of took her side of that one. That was a little too much. And now, you know what she said, mother said about him? She said, you've heard of men dying with their boots on? She said, well, I think Bum was born with his boots on. And talking about being country and being a cowboy, that really was him.
No question. He's got some really good, you know, humorous quotes. And I think he's also got some great quotes about just coaching philosophy as well that kind of can get lost with some of the country humor. But one of them, how do you win? By getting average players to play good and good players to play great. That's how you win. One of those that kind of still obviously stands the test of time. If you can get the average guys to play good and the good ones to play great, you're going to have a great, great chance right there.
Yeah, that's right. And I think he followed that up with, if your average players play mediocre or your good ones play average, then you find yourself in a lot of trouble.
No question.
Said, unfortunately, there's no way to know which way it's going to go for you, though.
Another one, he talked about discipline. You know, the only discipline that lasts is self-discipline. What was his self-discipline like? Obviously, a successful guy. I know he spent hours and hours and hours at the office, you know, maybe even too much, as maybe he tried to communicate to you later in your career. But how did he kind of live that quote?
Yeah, I mean, he's a do the right thing person, you know, try to do the right thing. And obviously, he was dedicated to work, and he did work long hours, you know, which he later on said he probably didn't need to be down there. And what he said was, you don't need to be down there telling stories. You can be down there working, but sometimes you get in a situation where, you know, you're telling stories, these stories we're telling now at the office, and you don't get things done you need to get done and get back home with your family.
Right. Well, and that was the old days too, right? Where, I mean, I know they weren't the only staff, but Bum wasn't afraid at the time to have a Budweiser. So, I mean, like late at night when they're grinding on film, or I remember he used to have a bag of peanuts, like a giant bag, like a potato sack of shelled peanuts that he'd sit there and eat. Was that kind of the norm around the office?
Yeah. He wasn't afraid to drink a beer, that's for sure. But I mean, he didn't drink a whole lot, but I mean, he liked a cold beer on a hot day. He did that some, but not, you know, not a whole lot, not any problems from it. You know, a lot of people in his generation grew up that way.
No doubt. I mean, even when I was first getting in the league, some of that was still around, you know. It's kind of gone away with legal reasons and all that kind of thing. And, you know, everything's become much more buttoned up. One of the things, you know, he said, winning is only half of it. Having fun is the other half. You know, it just seemed to me always when you see the old NFL films videos that was something he really took to heart, you know, kind of the family atmosphere and still unique, I think, a little bit. You know, your Saturday walkthroughs where the players' families were invited, training camp stuff where you guys, you know, had live music and played dominoes, those types of things.
He believed in having fun and enjoying life, certainly. And those things, yeah, we had little kids running around on the field, you know, trying to practice on Saturdays, and then the people brought their dogs, and dogs are barking and running around on the practice field. And so good thing we didn't have to get much done on Saturdays to get ready for a Sunday game. But, it just brought everybody together and everybody had fun that day. We also had Willie Nelson show up at practice. The players talked to him and, you know, different things like that. Muhammad Ali came to practice one day. You know, football is important and winning is important, but enjoying it was important to him too.
One that has always stuck with me as well is football is a game of failure. You fail all the time, but you aren't a failure until you start blaming someone else. You know, just kind of that personal accountability. I think we all kind of learn over time, even the negative things that happen, you know, you can look back and say, hey, there's things that I could have done differently. Instead of blaming other people, taking ownership, taking accountability, I think it's still obviously a big part of coaching ball, but a great lesson for life.
Yeah, life and football, and just blaming somebody else gives you an out. It's just like we talked about before, you know, offense blaming the defense or defense blaming the offense because one of them isn't doing their job, quote, their job. It's not your job to analyze that or be a part of that. It's your job to get what you have to get done and do the best you can do it and not blame it on somebody else, because you're not going to do as well if you start blaming other people for things, and it brings you down first.
No question. Another shorter quote, respect all, fear none. I don't know if I'd ever, you know, as I was looking through some of these, I don't know if I'd ever, is that something you remember him saying? Respect, you know, all your opponents, fear none.
Yeah. Yeah. Especially Pittsburgh, when we were playing Pittsburgh with the Oilers. I mean, we respected them, but we didn't fear them. But that's the way you should play the game, is you got to have respect for everybody because they'll beat you if you don't. But if you fear them, you'll beat yourself.
And speaking of Pittsburgh, quite a few quotes over the years. I mean, what a rivalry there. And I know Pittsburgh was in the middle of that dynasty with all the great players, Mean Joe Green and Terry Bradshaw and everyone. He even talked about kind of just understanding that, hey, the road to the Super Bowl runs through Pittsburgh. Sooner or later, you got to go through Pittsburgh. It was just kind of understood at that point.
Yeah, they were so good that it was obvious to everybody, you know. And they won four out of six Super Bowls, so they deserve that. They deserve that respect for sure.
Years later, you know, he was quoted as saying, "It don't take long to spend all the time you want in Pittsburgh."
yeah, we had a friendly rivalry though. Now, one year we got beat pretty bad in the AFC Championship game, and I remember after the game, he said, we jumped offside on the first play of the game, and it got worse from there.
Got worse from there, yeah. Yeah. That's it's got kind of a John McKay feel to that one right there. I love that. You know, he talked about from a practice philosophy, he said, I never scrimmage Oilers against Oilers. What for? Houston isn't on our schedule. When he was talking about that, was he talking like live scrimmage? Full?
Yes. You know, a lot of people back then, especially, you know, had live scrimmages. When he first started in the league, we had 14 games. But when we had 16 games, you know, he didn't want to hurt his own players or his own players to get hurt. And you had more chance of getting hurt if you scrimmaged, you know, if you went live football. So we practiced in shorts and shoulder pads most of the time. That he was coaching in the NFL as a head coach at the Oilers and the Saints. So we didn't lose players before the season started or before the game started. And it's more that way now. The rules have really made it that way. But at that time, the rules weren't that way. And people were scrimmaging a lot. And I think they got some players hurt because of it.
Well, yeah. All of us hate to see, you know, these players work so hard coming up to these seasons and you know, you count on certain guys to fill certain roles and then a guy gets hurt. in a training camp or in a preseason game. You know, there's nothing worse than seeing that. That's definitely holds true. It may have been ahead of his time there. Talking about coaches, there's two kinds of coaches, them that's fired and them that's going to be fired. One of the all-time great quotes and so true to our profession. We can definitely relate to that one.
Yeah, I can relate a bunch of times. So, but, you know, I didn't believe it. He had been saying that, you know. We talked about my career before I got in the NFL and coached in high school and coached in college and bowl games every year in college and had good teams. And then started coaching with the Oilers and we'd go to the AFC championship game 2 years in a row. And we go to the and get beat by Pittsburgh, who wins the Super Bowl. And then the next year we get beat by Oakland in the playoffs and we got fired. And of course, Oakland went on and won the Super Bowl. So we lost the Super Bowl champ 3 years in a row and we were fired. And that's when I realized, man, we had won those 3 years. We had won more games than any team in the National Football League during the regular season and playoffs. But we were fired. So that's when I knew that that quote was true, unfortunately, for all us coaching wise. But it's just part of it. And you have to know that. And that saying is definitely true, and especially in the NFL.
No question. So there was a story about Bum and Sid Gilman watching tape one time. I'm sure you remember this, but Gilman ended up saying, you know, they're watching tape together. He said, "Hey, Bum, this is better than having sex. Watching film is better than having sex." And Bum told him, "Hey, you know, either I don't know how to watch film, Sid, or you don't know how to have sex." You know.
Yeah. Yeah. He said that one too. Yeah. Sid worked, you know, he was a workaholic, but evidently he didn't know much about sex.
I love that. Either I don't know how to watch film or you don't know how to have sex. But yeah. Of course, maybe one of the more endearing quotes to Texans, you know, or at least Houston fans, talking about the Cowboys and the rivalry there. They may be America's team, but we're Texas's team.
Yeah, that was after we beat them on Thanksgiving Day in Dallas. Thanksgiving Day game, obviously, in Dallas. The Oilers beat them, and that's when he said that. And they were really, obviously, a really good football team during those times, but that was a big win for us.
Yeah, I love that. I love that old photo of Bum and Tom Landry, you know, on the sideline, and they're kind of in shadow, and it's just fedora and the cowboy hat and the two old Texas coaches, you know, going at it. As a great old picture.
Yeah. And both of them were from Texas too. That was, you know, both of them were coaching Texas teams at the time and both of them grew up in Texas.
That's great. You know, of course he had some of the in-game, those NFL films, you know, referees, that sort of thing. Of course, he's known for saying, "Hey, can I tell you one thing? That's three holding penalties on one football team in a quarter and a half." And I think the guy kind of smirked. He says, "That ain't funny, you know."
That's right. Yeah. Yeah, he didn't say a whole lot to the officials during a ball game too much. Some coaches do a whole lot. But, yeah, every once in a while they'd get to him. He had a few run-ins. We'll talk about those later on too. Some of those officials that really just kind of ran their own game, no matter what.
Well, you know, obviously another thing to an official where he, you know, he says, "Now you can't do that. If you do, I'm telling you, you'll have more hell over it than a little bit."
You have more hell than a little bit.
Just that phrasing right there. That country, I'm sure a ref has never heard that before or since.
Probably true. Yeah, that's probably true.
One of his most famous quotes, you know, talking about Don Shula, and I believe he said this about Bear Bryant too, is, you know, he can take his'n and beat your'n, and he can take your'n and beat his'n, your team and beat his team, and he can take his team and beat your team. Either way, you know, they're that good a football coach.
Yeah, that's a tremendous compliment to give someone. Belichick comes to mind, and as far as I'm concerned, you know, obviously Don Shula at the time. Yeah, they can take their team and beat you, but they could also take your team and they could beat yours and your could beat theirs. And and that's the way it happened. Carl Mock said that one time.
That's great. I always have loved really a few different quotes pertaining to Earl Campbell. Why don't you tell him about his first training camp? You know, you took this first round pick and you get your guys' conditioning tests there.
For some reason, our strength and conditioning guys, they call them nowadays, you know, the preseason test was to see if players were in shape. And normally they run like 40-yard dashes, 10 of them or whatever, to see what kind of shape the players are in. Well, this one year, that year, Earl's year, they decided we're going to have the players run the mile to see, you know, what kind of shape they're in. Well, if you know anything about Earl Campbell with 40-inch thighs, he's not really a miler, you know. And so they started out and they start going, he ran one lap and then he ran, you know, he had to run four laps to get the mile in. And he ran about two laps and he stepped off the track and he couldn't run anymore. I think he was cramping up for sure. And the media, just like they are now, or always have been, you know, they run up to Bum and they say, Bum, what are we going to do? I said, Earl Campbell didn't make the mile. And he looked at him and he said, well, hell, we're third in a mile. We won't give it to him. But we're going to give it to him the rest of the time, which we did.
Well, what a perfect answer to just kind of diffuse that whole situation in one sentence. You know, some of the other things about Earl when they asked him about him getting up so slow after a run, he really gets up slow. And after he'd been tackled, he said, yeah, but he goes down slow too, which one of the obviously signatures of Earl Campbell's great career, Hall of Fame career there, breaking tackles, dragging guys along. But it was certainly noticeable then, right, how slow he got up and got back to the huddle.
Oh, yeah, everybody be in the huddle, and he's still getting up sometimes, you know. And the other thing, you're probably going to bring it up, but he also said about Earl, I can't say Earl is in the class by himself, but it don't take long to call the roll. And that was really true.
No doubt. I don't think anyone would argue with that even to this day, you know, with all the great backs that have come since.
And the other thing he said about Earl, which wasn't the funny thing he said about him, but it was really one of the truest things he said about him. He said, I've never known anyone in all my years of being around football more deserving of all the titles, records, and awards he's won. That's a pretty good tribute.
That's a great tribute. I know, you know, they had a very close relationship, even all the way through. You know, I know Earl was still in the later years of Bum's life, you know, still going out to the ranch and spending time. And what a great relationship those two had.
Yeah. One time Earl was hurt, and Bum said, Earl's walking better, but he's much more valuable to this team if he can run. He's walking a little better, but he's much more valuable that he can run.
You know, when he was doing games, you know, doing the color for the games, just kind of sticking with players. When Warren Moon was playing for the Oilers, he said he could throw a football through a car wash and not get it wet.
Yeah. And Warren Moon was that kind of quarterback for sure.
More yards in professional leagues than what anyone in history.
Yeah, I think so. Including Canadian, playing the Canadian ball. So,
mm-hmm. Well, you may have a couple in there.
Yeah, you know, one thing coaching-wise that he said to me that always stuck with me and should stick with any coach, but, you know, he always said coaching isn't bitching. Coaching isn't griping about something. It's teaching somebody to do it better, do it the right way. And after it happens, there's no use griping about it. You can try to, you know, you can try to help them get better, but you see it. I just see it in little league coaches and guys that think they're coaches, you know, griping at kids about stuff. When coaches to help kids get better, not to gripe about what they didn't do right, you know. And coaching wise, you know, too. I mean, they get enough negative already, you know, because they're not going to do things perfect, and so you try to instruct them, and it's constructive criticism. But just to criticize people just because they didn't do it the way you wanted it done, you better look back at yourself if you're a good coach and get it done right.
I love that. And I think there's just a perception in general from maybe a lot of the public that if you see a coach on the sideline. Now, don't get me wrong, there's great coaches that have all kinds of temperaments and personalities, but I think there's kind of a feeling from a lot of people that if they see a coach on the television ripping off his headset and just ripping into a guy as he comes off the field, there's an immediate to a lot of people like, ooh, that's a good coach right there. And of course, we've all been around good and bad coaches of all different temperaments. But just because someone is screaming, yelling may not mean they're a great coach. They could be a great coach, but you know, why do you think that is? Why do you think people kind of get that impression of coaches who are more emotive on the sideline?
Yeah, I don't think people know coaching as well as they should, because coaching is teaching, and you wouldn't want your teachers to teach that way, basically, to be hollering and screaming at young people or kids or someone in their class to try to instruct them to do better and math or whatever subject they're in. But then you say, you know, the football coach, yeah, that's great that he does that. And you've got to get the trust in the player or the student that you're trying to instruct them to get better. And you can be more forceful. That's, you know, a lot of guys have a great knack for that they can get on people pretty good. But as long as the person knows that they're doing the best for them, it's all the best for them, then you can get something done. You know, Daddy said he'd rather have a coach that he liked than a coach he didn't like. He felt like he'd play better for one that he liked than one that he didn't like. And I think there's a lot to that.
That's pretty simply said, but I think we all would prefer that. You know, and I think, you know, when it comes to coaches screaming and yelling, I mean, I think there's a real distinction to be made between passion and emotion, and then losing control, losing your temper to where you really don't have control of that. We all want passion. We all want emotion. We all want people who care so much. It means so much to them. But if you ever get to a point where you lose control of your emotions, you know, who knows what you're saying? Who knows what kind of relationships you could hurt along the way that sometimes you can't repair if you say the wrong thing to, you know, particularly, you know, NFL players, grown men who are men in their own rights and really don't deserve to be talked down to.
Yeah, that's a great lesson to be learned by everybody for sure.
Perhaps maybe my favorite, maybe his most famous quote was, you mentioned being with the Oilers, playing Pittsburgh 2 years in a row in the AFC championship game. You know, you guys came back to the Astrodome. So make sure I'm getting this right. You know, after the first time you lose to Pittsburgh in the AFC championship at Pittsburgh, you come back to the Astrodome and there's a number of fans there, right? Like 50,000.
Yeah. Oh yeah. There's a big crowd. Yeah.
And that wasn't when he gave the famous quote. That was the next year, correct?
Yeah, next year the same thing happened. We went to Pittsburgh. We lost in a lot closer game. The Renfro, we probably talk about that later on, the Renfro catch, non-catch. But we'd done it 2 years in a row. This is the second year we went back. And all the players and the coaches too said, you know, let's don't go back to the Astrodome after. Actually, we were 3 hours late. The plane was 3 hours late coming from Pittsburgh. So everybody was tired. We had lost in the championship game. And the word going around was, let's don't go. Let's don't go. There's nobody going to be there. Everybody's disappointed.
Well, yeah, you come back and there's, you know, 70,000 plus fans waiting for you. That, you know, they pull the buses down through the tunnel right onto the field, right?
Right, yeah. The parking lot was, when we got there, we realized there were people there, you know, because it wasn't like a regular game where everybody parked, you know, you had parking spaces. Everybody was there. Those 60, 70,000 people had just parked in the parking lot anywhere they could get, you know, anywhere they could park and got out of the cars and went in. So it was actually hard to get the buses through because there were no lanes. So that's when we realized there were a lot of people there. When the buses, they could roll the buses down into the Astrodome and open up the gate into the stadium. So we just drove right into the stadium to a deafening roar. I've heard all the stadiums who say they have the loudest crowd and so forth, but that night was the loudest I've ever heard anywhere. It was tremendous. It was so loud. And it was so unexpected because we had lost twice, 2 years in a row. Players were crying. I didn't say I was, did I? I might have. But anyway, coaches were crying. I mean, it was just, it was an emotional deal that's unmatched in my lifetime. You know, winning the Super Bowl was a great feeling, so forth. But this was unmatched, in my opinion, in my life, certainly. And then Bum went on to talk to the crowd after that.
So, well, yeah, he gets the microphone and finally, you know, everyone quiets down to listen to what Bum's going to say. And he says, maybe the perfect thing ever. You know, we all wish we could just come up with the, I don't know if he had this thing planned or what, but 1 year ago, we knocked on the door. This year, we beat on the door. And next year, we're going to kick the son of a bitch in.
Yeah, and the crowd just exploded.
Oh, of course.
I mean, and I'm sure you can YouTube it. You can find it. You know,
yeah.
You can hear the crowd in that. But being there in person was even louder. It was amazing. And, you know, the rest of the story was, you know, Pittsburgh had won 4 out of 6 Super Bowls then after that season. The next year, we beat Pittsburgh in Houston, our second game in Houston, and we beat them 6-0. We shut them out in Houston, and that knocked them out of the playoffs for the first time in 6 years. So we didn't beat down the door of the whole, or we didn't kick the son of a gun in getting to the Super Bowl, but we did knock out the Pittsburgh Steelers.
Well, that's great. Dad, did you have any other specific quotes that you wanted to mention?
Well, the only other one I thought was great was when we were in Green Bay and practiced the day before. And we went out to practice. And when we came back in early, and he said, you can't practice being miserable.
Yeah, yeah. And that was obviously you guys were practicing outdoors in Green Bay.
Right. Yeah, we were playing Green Bay. And it was towards the end of the season when we were with the Oilers. And we always, at that time, when we traveled, we always practice at the other team's facility the day before on Saturday. Our Saturday practice, instead of being in the hotel, some teams now walk through in a hotel. Well, we always went to the other team's practice field. So in Green Bay, we were going to go to their practice field. So we got in the dressing room, and it was cold that day. And if it's cold in Green Bay, it's cold. So I was putting every layer I could get on, and players and stuff were already going out to the field, and we were going to practice, and the wind was blowing too. So I start walking out, and I see my dad coming in, and I said, "What are you doing, Dad?" And he said, "We're going back in." I said, "Why?" He said, "You can't practice being miserable." And so we didn't practice, and we went out and played in Green Bay the next day and beat Green Bay. But I just thought it was so funny, and it's true. I mean, it's no use practicing something like that. Nobody would have paid attention anyway.
Yeah, for sure. Well, great. I think we've kind of wrapped up this episode here. Dad.
Okay.
Kind of wraps up that story and wraps up our Bumisms episode there, where we get to kind of relive some of the great moments from your dad, my grandfather, Bum Phillips.
Yeah, that was him. He was something special. I never did say that about Tom Landry, but he never shook hands with anybody.
Tom Landry didn't shake hands with anyone?
Nope.
Was it a germ thing?
He just waved. Now, he was the same every game, win or lose, but he just waved and would go in, but he never.
How do you feel about the shaking hands after? I mean, you know, some people would argue sportsmanship. Some people say, what's the point of making the guys?
I mean, I always thought it was sportsmanship, you know, but they can do like you did and spit in your hand and shake hands with them. So
We can get a Jim Harbaugh, Jim Schwartz interactions going and slap each other on the back and
that's right.
Squeeze the hand real tight. Good game.